Welcome to the Vibe Lifter podcast. I'm Tish, one of the Reglan Food co-founders, and I'm here to help lift your vibe with inspiring stories from people out in their local communities doing good mahi. So settle in and let's meet our guest of the day. Today, we're chatting with Una Brown. She's a master chocolatier, a cacao ambassador working with farmers all around the Pacific, Edmund Hillary Fellow and co-founder of Weave Cacao, and one of the most genuine, fun Irish ladies that you'll ever meet. Welcome, Una.
Oh, thank you, Tash.
It's so lovely to be able to do this with you. I'm glad it worked out.
It's awesome.
Because straight after this, you're flying back to Christchurch, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, we've got you for a short window. We're going to make the most of it. So, Una, you've had many transitions, many journeys in your life, from growing up in Ireland to ending up here in Aotearoa, working as an IT project manager at Procter & Gamble, which is very different to becoming a master chocolatier. So talk me through some of your personal evolution.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have personal evolutions because we don't really know what's for us unless we dare to step out into some unknown field. So growing up in Ireland, I always adored chocolate, but like everybody, I just thought it was for me to eat. Mm-hmm. I followed the mainstream path that was available, which was go to university. What did I want to do? I studied business, look for, you know, big career. But when I stepped into the corporate world, after a few years, I just became really a low-level depression, I would say, in terms of, you know, I don't know what's for me, but this definitely isn't. So, you know, I ticked the boxes. I was doing well. We're living in London with my then husband, and I just was like, so I started looking at, will I do an MBA? What will I do to just step out of this? Because this cannot be my whole of my, the rest of my life.
Not fulfilling.
You're not fulfilling. Yeah. Well, I didn't really understand myself and who I was.
Yeah.
And I just followed a mainstream path. Mm-hmm. So we packed up everything, sold up everything, and went traveling for a few years, which was radical back then.
Yeah.
Not now, but radical back then. Everybody thought we were crazy because we seemingly had the dream life, the corporate life. Ticked all the boxes.
And this is pre-kids.
I didn't even think I wanted kids because I didn't see how they could fit into that life. So yeah, I went traveling for a couple of years, explored the world. But more than anything, I started exploring myself.
Yes.
And my own personal growth and who I was and what I really wanted in life. And that took us to Australia, where we settled for a while. And I started doing I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I hated the question people would say, what do you do?
Yeah.
I had no answer.
like.
And so much my identity was wrapped up in my job and my career. Mm. And that was the first thing I had to undo. Mm-hmm. Who am I without that identity? And so I decided to do a yoga teacher training.
Yeah.
Just as something cool and I would enjoy that. And yeah, even back then, yoga seemed a bit out there on the edge.
Yeah.
Which seems crazy.
Yeah. At least compared to Procter & Gamble. Yes.
Yes. So yeah. Mm-hmm. And my, you know, Catholic Irish upbringing. So yoga hadn't hit Ireland by then.
No. Has it hit now?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah. So then I just started making chocolate for friends for Christmas, thinking, oh, that'll be, you know, cool thing. I'll make something for people as gifts. And
you just taught yourself or did you do a course or something? Or?
No. I just opened the book and this lady gave me this amazing recipe. I tasted chocolate she'd made for a charity event. I was like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And so I tried to make that. And then this magic happened. It's like an artist finding their medium. I had instant ideas of how to change it. And yeah, just this incredible magic opened in me. And I just followed that. And I made my first commercial chocolate living in Byron Bay for the markets there. And they still talk about it.
They do? I love the Byron Bay markets.
Yeah, it was incredible.
I can picture you there selling chocolates.
Yeah.
So what did they look like then? Were they like truffles or bars?
It's still available. It's called a decadent date.
A decadent date.
Yeah, so it's
made
a fresh organic medjool date stuffed with. Then it was a macadamia butter because I live next to a macadamia farm in Byron Bay. Butter with chocolate and orange oil and dipped in chocolate. And they just were like,
it was called so good.
A divine moment of pleasure.
I want one now.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Ah, okay. And so that kind of just evolved from there where you were like a self-taught chocolate maker, chocolate seller.
Yeah, and the gift of that was that I didn't know the rules. So I just broke them.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know I was doing that. I just followed my own intuition and it really opened up a creative side that I didn't think I had. I didn't think I was an artist in terms of a tradition of, you know, being an artist or a painter or But this creative passion and love erupted and I just kept following it.
And then that eventually led you here to New Zealand.
To New Zealand. And, and really, I just, Australia was too hot to make chocolate.
Yeah. Gosh, you'd always have melting chocolate.
And I just really was drawn after living in Australia for about 4 or 5 years, drawn to New Zealand. I had two children at that point. My third child was born here. So I have an international family, three different passports my children have.
Wow. They're pretty cool. I've met them. Lovely kids. Oh, wow. Okay. So that's a bit of your business and personal journey. What about your journey of cacao itself? Because there's a whole kind of world within that, right? What makes the plant so special? How can people benefit from connecting with it? Is it something that kind of came to you just through working with it? Or were there other reasons that caused you to explore it and get to know it so deeply?
Yeah, there's a few levels. I think I always had such a special connection and recognized it as something really magic with this being more than just an ingredient. And I always wanted to go to the source of it.
Yes.
So 15 years ago, I first visited a cacao farm in Fiji because I just thought everybody who works with chocolate would want to do that. But then I realized actually that was quite unusual. And people just saw it as an ingredient. But to me, it was always more than that. And so I was working with chocolate for about 12 years. And then we had the earthquakes in Christchurch.
Yes.
And basically about 9 months after that, I had what I would call a breakdown. Suffered from PTSD, extreme PTSD, anxiety, depression, and really went into a very dark place in my life. After a couple of years, I Googled natural antidepressants because some of my friends wanted me to go on to antidepressants and I just did not want to go down that path. And cacao came up.
And you're like, oh, I already know about that.
Right? And so I started taking it and within 10 days, there was enough space from the bombardment of negative thoughts that was I was just being completely taken by. And I started feeling its power and gift in that way. And so my relationship started changing with it. Radically, in terms of it being much more than the ingredient that makes chocolate.
Yes.
And I spent time in Peru, which is the origin of it on a sacred ancient level, where it was consumed for over 5,000 years.
Wow.
As their most sacred plant, as a drink, as a daily ritual. And there's so much more behind it. So chocolate, as we know, it's only a couple of hundred years old.
Yeah.
The magic and power of the tree is thousands of years old. And of course, it originated in Central and South America, but then it was taken around the world from the 1500s on once chocolate became a thing in Europe.
Yes.
And so it's not indigenous in the Pacific, but it is in terms of it being such a core part of the livelihood of the Pacific now. And so important that we look there because it's our closest source in Aotearoa.
Yeah.
Pacific, our brothers and sisters.
And I remember you telling me this fact at some point that stayed with me, which was that the saucer was like invented for the purpose of drinking cups of cacao, right?
That's
in England.
Right. Yes.
Which I was like, wow, that's extraordinary. I never would have thought that those two things went
together. So when it came to Europe, so it came in its traditional form, which is the whole bean roasted, ground into, when you grind the bean, it'll go into a paste. And mixed with water traditionally is how it was served in Central and South America. And then they added sugar when it came to Europe. But it was the elite royal drink.
Yes.
And then the cup and saucer was invented for it. So hot chocolate cacao was far more popular than tea or coffee.
Wow. And it was so you didn't lose any precious drops, right?
Any precious drops. And also it stained the gowns.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't want cacao on your fancy gown.
Your royal beautiful gown.
Yeah, wow, what a story. And then I guess coming back to the Pacific, because that's been so much of your work for the last 6+ years, right? What does that mean to you? Like, what have you kind of learnt from the people of the Pacific? Because you've traveled all around with this work. You've been to Vanuatu, Solomon Islands, Papua New Guinea. What's been the influence on you from all of those trips and all that time with the people there?
Your first question was, you know, life-changing moments. So I went from Fiji, then I spent time with a friend of mine who has a farm in Samoa. And in Samoa, everybody drinks their own cacao. It's called Cocoa Samoa. And it's part of daily life. It's part of rituals. They'll have kava. They'll have Coco Samoa. And then I was invited with my friend Flores to the Solomon Islands. And it was such a shock for me to see the disconnect of the farming communities to cacao. Mm. So they would drink Milo, but they did not know what was growing under trees actually went into Milo, or that they could have it first and foremost as a food.
Wow. So they just saw it as something.
Such a disconnect. They called it white man's food for overseas and no idea. And of course, no idea what chocolate was. And everything in me in that moment changed, and that I was like, well, I don't believe we've the right to have chocolate in the West unless there's balance in the livelihoods of those who grow it. One, that they have the ability and knowledge to have it. They have the gift of cacao in their lives, and that they should thrive through cacao.
Mm.
So everything in my life changed from that point to being
That visit to the Solomons. Yeah,
to being in service to the cacao farming communities. So they first and foremost have the joy and gift of cacao in their lives.
Mm.
And then how that can be fully transparent in a supply chain into the world. So then consumers and chocolate lovers have the most authentic, beautiful chocolate possible, without it being diluted in any way all the way through. Because, you know, we are drawn to chocolate.
Oh, yeah. We're all loving it.
It's a part of fundamental life in the West, right?
Every special occasion.
Everything, right? Wedding cakes, birthday cakes, they're the sacred ceremonies of the past in modern form. So I just was like, this has to change. And this is my life's mission. And I knew it. And that's been every breath really since then. And what it takes. So being on the ground in the Pacific is humbling.
Yes.
There's so much to learn and what we've lost in the West of presence, being in the moment, being in community. And at the same time, there's so much that we have at our fingertips that's not available. Just running water, access to medication, access to dental, the most basic things we take for granted, being able to get in the car, going to the shops. You know, we're talking about remote villages, only able to get there by boat.
Yeah.
And that's the journey cacao goes on as well.
It has to travel a really long way to end up in our birthday chocolate cake.
Yes, yes. And so I love being there. It resets me into the gift of life and the joy, because the joy just bubbles up. And the people of the Pacific, so incredible in their laughter and the magic of that. But they also deserve choice and to thrive.
And to actually be compensated for all the work that they're doing growing this amazing crop.
And to have the connection with the crop. And the incredible thing is, you speak to a cacao farmer and you talk about the magic of the cacao tree and they know.
Even without having eaten chocolate.
Exactly. Or even without tasting the beans. I'll speak with a group of 200 farmers and I'll say, okay, so who drinks Milo? And they all put their hand up.
Right.
And I'll ask them, so who's tasted their own cacao bean? And no one will put their hand up.
Wow, it's so shocking, isn't it?
Isn't it?
So surprising. So surprising. I still can't get over
this. Huge disconnect. Yeah. And then you go back after they've been having their own cacao and it's just magic is happening. Then everything happens from that place.
Well, the sense of pride that you would have, you know, you actually know what you're making. It's like,
absolutely.
It would change everything.
And there's so much out there in the world about a world shortage of cacao.
Yes.
And there's a lot of hype. Mm. It's not true, because I see a lot of cacao not being harvested.
Mm.
And we will run out of cacao farmers before we'll run out of cacao, because the average age is late 50s. The youth are not interested. It's hard work. The price has been so low, irregular, inconsistent. And like you said, they don't have a connection, so there's no pride.
Yeah.
One farmer told me once when he was growing up in Papua New Guinea, how the teacher said to them, if you don't do your homework, you'll end up as a cacao farmer.
Right. So it's seen as like the lowest of the low.
Right. And then the world loves chocolate. And they should be so proud to be part of that story.
Yeah.
Bringing that to the world.
We're so reliant on them, you know. And they just don't even realize. Wow. And so then in that work that you do when you're working with these cacao farming communities, I know a lot of it is, you're connecting them to the cacao, but then you're also helping them by improving the quality of the beans, right? So maybe tell me a little bit about that, the process of actually fermenting, drying, because most people have no idea. There's a lot of steps involved before you can eat a chocolate bar,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's two kind of main markets out there, which is one we call the bulk market, which mm-hmm. is massive factories, and they're not so concerned by the quality, and it's driven by the world stock market price.
Right.
Because cacao is a commodity in the world stock market, like oil. And so the price goes up and down.
Mm.
And then there's the more boutique market, which is the quality market. And that price is more consistent.
Mm.
The mission is not just about raising the quality of lives for the farmers and having the connection. It's about creating a long-term plan for them so they can look into the future relying on cacao. So they know that long-term, they keep put in the work. They put in and create the quality. There's a long-term market and price for them.
Mm.
So that's been part of creating that new market and doing it in a way to show the chocolate industry that it is possible to pay the farmers a real true price, create incredible chocolate, create incredible cacao products, bring that to the market, and everybody can thrive to that whole supply chain.
Yeah, amazing. You've been all over the world doing this, especially around the Pacific. And I know you've been invited to judge events. You know, the Bougainville Chocolate Festival was one of them recently. And that's an area with a very interesting history. And you just recommended to me that documentary, Soldiers Without Guns. And I watched it last week with my husband. And we were like, wow, this, you know, we've never heard about this. And it's really quite incredible the role that New Zealand played in that place and bringing that conflict to an end. For anyone who's interested, it's available to watch free online through New Zealand On Air. How has cacao played a role in healing in some of these places and, you know, made such a difference for the people there in terms of their economy? Like, would you say that in some areas of the Pacific, it's the main source of income? Would that be true?
Yeah, so they call them cash crops.
Mm.
So cacao will only grow in a tropical environment.
Right.
So it won't grow in New Zealand, even in Northland.
No, it can't do it.
Not hot enough. So it grows in heavily tropical environment. So it's a very abundant environment. So the communities will always have root crops. They will always have coconuts, tropical fruits.
Mm.
But to be able to buy salt, sugar, soap, put a roof on the house, that level, they need cash.
Mm.
And so they call it cash crops.
Mm-hmm.
So cacao is one of the predominant cash crops in the Pacific. But because there was no relationship to cacao, they had no understanding of what the price should be or what quality should be. So their livelihoods was always being
exploited
and dominated by the world stock market price. Mm. So every time they would take a sack down to the wharf or to the bar, they would get a different price.
Mm, so you can't plan around
that. You could not plan around it. Now, right now, it's a really high price.
Yeah.
So the farming communities are doing really well in cacao and you see them have their hope. But that happened in the 80s and the price crashed. And so I've walked amongst cacao farms where the trees haven't been harvested in 20 years because the farmers, it cost them more to put it on a boat than they were getting for their cacao. And so it's about creating long-term sustainable livelihoods. And that is a possibility with cacao. We're not going to run out of chocolate lovers.
No, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere, right?
No.
So the farmer should thrive to this incredible ingredient.
Yeah, it's only fair.
It's only fair. It's only right and it's only true. So I always encourage everybody to even, right now, everybody's seeing the price of chocolate go up in the supermarkets everywhere. And so right now it does mean the farmers are getting that price.
Mm.
But if the world stock market comes down, then ask the question, what about the farmers? Are they still being paid that price?
Yeah.
Because we want it to be long-term, not to be changeable because it's a commodity, futures, everything that happens on the world stock market should not affect the lives of these farmers.
No, because they're counting on it for their daily survival.
Daily survival. And that's what life is like. It takes everything to be in life there, to get the firewood, to cook the food, to go out in the boat, to fish. There's nothing convenient.
Mm.
It's fully living in life for the basics. And that's so refreshing in the villages, but also
A struggle in some ways.
There isn't the luxury that we have to just, oh, I'm tired tonight, so I'll just pop by the takeaway.
Yeah, they can't do that.
My Indian, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of this, you know, all of this that you've learned and seen, that sort of led to your long-term vision for the Pacific and for cacao farmers and to Weave Cacao, which I'm lucky to be part of. Full disclosure, your vision has attracted me into it. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, what for you would look like the change that you want to see in cacao farming in the Pacific?
It starts in the chocolate industry. And what I would say is there's a fog around the chocolate industry. So it's such a love food. Consumers love it. Chefs use it. Patisseries, pastry chefs, everybody uses this ingredient, but most people do not understand how it's grown, where it comes from, what the work is involved. You mentioned earlier fermenting. Cacao is actually a fermented ingredient. Mm. The beans are picked from the pods, they're put into a fermentation box. They can be dried in different ways. So the process is at least 2 weeks from the time the pod's picked off the tree. So there's quite a process involved that develops the flavor to affect the quality. Also the health properties that are in the beans, because it is true, cacao is good for you. Dark chocolate is good for you.
Yes. It's official. Well, it should be if it's, you know, but we add so many things to it.
And how it's processed and how it's made and how it ends up in the chocolate and if the bean's been broken, all of those things affect the quality. Mm. So my vision is to remove that fog. So as consumers, we truly understand what high quality chocolate is, can be, can taste like. We understand where it grows and how it gets to us. And that the whole supply chain is one where everybody thrives.
Yeah.
The farmers in balance with the consumer, because the consumer deserves quality, beautiful chocolate in all it possibly can be. Mm. So the decadence, the flavor and the health benefits.
Yes.
And the farmers thrive. And I really believe that's possible. And so Weave is, it's about producing that caliber of gorgeous chocolate, ensuring the farmers are part of that, part of the story, part of the pride.
Yes.
But leading the way and showing it's possible, inspiring the chocolate industry to follow, not pointing fingers, not saying what has gone in the past. It's just, this is what's possible for the farming communities, first for them.
Yes.
Cacao's first for them.
Yeah.
Then they learn how to trust again the West, because they don't trust us. We've come and gone depending on what we've needed in the West.
Yeah.
Trust us. We're there for you. We're part of the one family and walk together to create a new future together. And in that, bring the most extraordinary chocolate at a real price to the consumer. So it's all possible.
Yeah.
One does not have to be compensated over the other.
For the other.
Not profit first. So all of it together is possible. And we're doing that in Weave. We genuinely are. We're showing the way. It is possible.
Mm, and at volume, right? So that's the difference. Because people have tried to do it, I guess, on a small scale and raise awareness through things like the craft chocolate industry, bean to bar. And that's, you know, beautiful, wonderful, and definitely appreciated. But I guess what I've heard from you and others is that it's only a really small volume of beans that those projects are moving. So for a whole village that's relying on this, you know, income year round, they need sort of serious volume.
They need serious volume. And that's where it's possible as well. So the craft chocolate industry does an amazing job of educating consumers of what chocolate can truly be. But it's possible to do in volume. There's 2.5 million cacao households in the Pacific.
Yeah.
That's a lot of families.
Extraordinary number.
Extraordinary number.
I think people are truly surprised by that number. Anyone that I've shared that with, they like look at me like, oh, wow. They don't even really realize that we have cacao growing in the Pacific. I think everyone thinks of it as something coming out of Africa or out of South America.
That's right, yeah. Mm. And a majority of that is in Papua New Guinea because it's a very big landmass and a lot of cacao farmers. And historically, there's been a mix of just bulk. But prior to, like you mentioned, Bougainville provided in the 80s some of the best cacao into Europe.
Wow.
It was well renowned in Europe for the caliber. And I always say to our beautiful cacao farming families, the cacao does its work. The tree does its work. It always produces quality. A lot of people talk about varieties. Mm. And at the end of the day, if it's a healthy, happy tree, it's going to produce beautiful cacao.
Yeah.
That's what we do with
it. That's what you do with it. Yeah. The steps you take after makes all the difference. So then for you personally, like you've talked a little bit about this, the impact it's had on you, but what would be some recommendations for people listening and thinking, oh, I'd love to incorporate cacao more into my life or my rituals or routines? You know, and you said earlier that you started taking cacao. I wonder, what did they look like? Was that a drink in the morning? Was it just being really conscious about the types of chocolate that you bought and ate, or mix of the above? Yeah, what would be some tips there?
I love to describe cacao as like a trinity. It has three incredible aspects to it. One is chocolate, right? So decadent, less is more.
Yes.
Like you have a beautiful, velvety, gorgeous, full-flavored chocolate. Mm-hmm. You don't need a lot to just have that incredible warm feeling, right?
Yes.
From chocolate.
The fuzzies that you get from chocolate.
And then like about 25 years ago, David Avocado Wolf really took superfoods out to the world.
So
talked about superfoods, and he had cacao in there, and very much talked about like cacao powder as like a superfood. And he actually talked about it being raw, but cacao originally was never consumed raw. And so that's where sort of the raw chocolate movement came out of. But he brought back to the world the fact that cacao is not just turned into chocolate. It's actually a superfood, as it was in the Amazon for eons of time. So it's a high source of antioxidants, like 1,400 times more than blueberries.
Really? Wow.
Off the Richter scale for antioxidants, high source of plant-based magnesium, iron. It has chemicals that changes the imbalance in the brain for low-level depression or anxiety. Mm. Not too much, just enough to help create that nice positive feeling. That's why, you know, it has anandamide, which is like that bliss love molecule, right?
Yes.
He's feeling like, I'm in love when I eat lots of chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
It's got so many theobromine. It's got so many superfood properties to it. So when you have cacao in its purest form, so in its purest form is the actual cacao bean.
Yes.
And then that can be turned to what we call a cacao paste. So it's ground into a paste. So if you drink that every day, it's like the superfood charged hot chocolate.
Yes. That's what I'm having every morning.
Right. And you feel the benefit, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Right. So it gives you a nice amount of energy, helps you wake, but it's also the ritual of it, the smell of it, the making
smell.
Of it. You look forward to that moment, which is the third aspect for me, is its spiritual aspect of cacao, which the ancients always knew. And it's a very sacred tree, and it just really helps us connect to our heart. And if you're having a meeting and you have cacao or chocolate, everybody just kind of relaxes a bit more.
Opens you up. Yeah.
You know, so it has those three aspects for me. And to have it in your life in those ways is just the most incredible support day to day. And it's huge for low level anxiety. And I have such a myriad of stories of people telling me, sharing me the difference it's made in their life when they've had about 30 grams of pure cacao every morning.
Yeah. And such a delicious way to do it. You know,
absolutely. Like,
so much better than a tablet. It's delicious.
It's delicious. Mm. And that's like as a human being in Ireland, we have Celtic tradition. Mm. It's really important that our senses are activated to help us be present.
Yes.
So when you go out surfing or you're climbing a mountain or you're mountain biking, you have to be present in the moment, right? So all those thoughts that you were worried about or whatever shift.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, well, what was that? What was the big deal about all of that, right?
Why was
I so worried about that? I can do that, no problem. Cacao has the same effect.
It brings you into that moment.
Into that presence where you have space from the thoughts that might cause fear or doubts or anxiety by drinking a luscious cup of cacao.
Oh, beautiful way to do it. I wonder if you could explain to people, just because I found this so interesting myself when I first learned it from you, around, you mentioned earlier, if the bean is broken, you know, or whole bean, that whole concept, I never understood before that a lot of times when people, the majority of the times when you're making chocolate or eating chocolate from the supermarket, it's had the butter taken out and then it's been replaced with milk powder and lecithin. To give it the creaminess back that it already naturally has.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So, yeah, can you speak to that a little bit more? Because that's quite fascinating. I think it's something that we just don't understand here.
Yeah, and so nobody understands. So we're just really starting to open up to that knowledge. So you crack open the cacao pod, it sits in its fruit.
Yes.
So you scoop out the fruit and the seeds and you ferment the seed in the fruit. That fermentation process brings out the flavor of the chocolate and activates all the health properties.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with this dry, hard looking bean, but actually it kind of crumbles in your hand because there's so much fat in there, which is the cacao butter.
Yes.
So because it's packed with all the medicine, all the antioxidants, minerals, magnesium, which is in the powder inside this bean, for the body to absorb that, it needs a fat.
Yes. So it needs the butter.
miracle of Mother Nature created both inside the one bean.
Yes.
So it has 50% cacao butter, 50% cacao powder within that bean.
Yeah. So it's an even balance.
An even balance. Mm. And so when it was first consumed in Europe, the whole bean was ground down, the whole bean was consumed. But in the Industrial Revolution, they discovered how, through like hydraulic press, how when you grind it down, it becomes a paste. Mm. If you squeeze that paste under high pressure, the butter drips out and you're left with the cake of powder.
Ah.
And it was that point that drinking chocolate came into form, because cacao was only affordable by the aristocrats, by the wealthy. Mm. But suddenly they had this fat, this butter, which was highly valuable. The pharmaceutical industry used it, the cosmetics industry used it, and it was highly valuable. So then they would sell off the powder really cheap.
Mm.
And that became our drinking chocolate that we know today. The Milo, the Cadbury's drinking chocolate, and it became available, but the butter was all taken out.
Yeah, and then we can't absorb the goodness.
And then we can't absorb the goodness. And then you start having like superfood smoothies with adding coconut oil in, and it's like, what? It's all there in the bean originally.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Why use these other alternatives?
So most mainstream chocolate is made in that way. So the butter's, a little bit of butter's added back in, sugar, lecithin, but you're not getting the whole bean. In its superfood power and potency. So when you eat dark chocolates made from the whole bean, like you get with Kraft chocolate or Weave Coverture chocolate, your body's able to absorb the whole benefit with a little bit of sugar. It's not a problem, because the fats and the beans in its whole form, your body recognizes it, goes, thank you very much.
Yes,
this
I'll
is the real
that.
Chocolate experience I want. And the health benefits and life's good.
Yeah, such an amazing thing to understand. You recommended that documentary to me recently, which I thought was great. Is there anything else that you've watched, read, heard recently that you might recommend to others, either for inspiration, education? Doesn't have to be cacao related.
There's so much available out there.
Yeah, so much.
So much available. And we need a lot of discernment in what we're watching or listening to. But really, because my own path, I've changed it up so many times.
Mm.
I just think ultimately for everybody to follow their own intuition and knowing.
Mm.
Because if I was sitting here 20 years ago on a podcast with you,
I definitely
wouldn't be thinking you're going to be saying to me, asking me all these chocolate questions. And, you know, I could not have foreseen what was for me.
Mm.
So, you know, when I watch things, I kind of travel through a trail and I'll, you know, open up to where whatever I'm meant to watch or listen to. But I just think if we ask a question, the information comes to us of what's next and meant to be for us. And I just feel so blessed and grateful to be able to sit here, to share this, to be so passionate about what I'm in and serving in life from having some tough life experiences. To come through that.
Yeah.
And I believe we're all here for something great. And it's inside all of us. And we've all got different keys to open that. And always have chocolate. And if you can, cacao. Because it's just, why not? It's the most amazing daily support and joy in life, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a great answer. Something that I've really appreciated, actually, about working with you, with Weave Cacao, is your sense of playfulness and fun. And I wondered if you have any reflections on that, like how we can bring more joy into the work that we do. Because I feel, I've seen this myself, I feel like there's just not enough joy out there with what people are doing, and work gets quite serious. So is there anything, is it something that you've developed over time? Is it something you think you've always had?
I think I probably always had it, but lost it.
Mm.
And I think that's why the gift of experience, right? So having been in the corporate world, having been in some like dark times, to appreciate the power of joy.
Yeah.
But we have to work hard at it to belong to it. Right? Because it doesn't, we used to have it, and definitely being Irish and the sense of humor in Ireland is amazing.
Yeah.
I had to really work hard to reclaim it
and
dare to be joyful when my mind would tell me I shouldn't.
Mm.
You know, because we take on all these conditions of what it is to be a woman or successful in the world or whatever it is we've taken on as conditioning. So yeah, I had to really reclaim the sense of joy as being a first priority.
Yeah.
Because otherwise what for? Yes, we have to earn but we can actually do that with joy first, and we change the whole world.
Yeah.
If we laughed more, right?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, reclaim the joy. Well, I feel like that's a perfect note to end on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you. Yeah, it's wonderful to witness everything that you've been doing, to hear about it. The more that I learn about your backstory, I'm like, oh, wow, there was that to it as well, and this, and, you know, and it all kind of makes sense to see what you're doing now with your time and just how much you love doing what you're doing. It's a very special thing.
It's very special working with you, Tesh, and having you in my life, so thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Vibe Lifter podcast. We hope that tuning into this interview has lifted your vibe. Check out raglanfoodco.com to learn more about the people and projects we're stoked to be supporting. I bought it, a true hobby, the one to shake the sun and down, down. I follow through with the dish that you play.